Okay. Before we start the next talk, there's just a little bit of announcement about the lightning talks. We had a few more submissions than we can fit into the time available. So we're looking at doing the overflow tomorrow at some point. But we've picked out 12 to do this afternoon. And I just wanted to flag up the first three of those, just so that if people are in this room or amongst those giving those talks, then, well, they've at least got a moment to think about the fact that they're going to be on fairly briskly. Apparently, this is a sort of randomized list, the ordering of it. And the first one is Data Liberation Scraping Using Python with Chris Esther. The second one is crowdsourcing from NZ with Ben Healy. And the third is Web Sockets and Python, Alexander Abushkinovich. I'm actually just going to read out the names of the other people as well, because obviously there's two people who have submitted a talk and won't be doing it. They probably might like to know that. So the other people giving a talk this afternoon will be Greg Fawcett, John Graves, Leon Matthews, Tim Penny, Jürgen Brendel, Danva Bregenzer, Brad Milne, Aaron Shaw, I hope I've pronounced that correctly, AURYNN, and Aldo Cortese. Right, now we go on to the actual talk. Ollie is going to talk. Ollie works with a product called Jimian, which is a open source Zapian, sorry, which is an open source search engine. And he's going to talk this afternoon about using Swig to wrap objects to use within Python. I might let him get on with it. Thanks, Ollie.
Okay. So this, for those of you who are here for Tim's talk just now, this is in a similar sort of vein, but whereas Tim was giving a rather broad overview, I'm focusing in on a particular technique. And I've been working with Swig for probably 7 or 8 years, and I've had commit access to repository for about 5 years after I bombarded them with enough patches that they gave in. The reason I started using it was Zapier itself is written in C++, and we provide bindings on top of that for a number of languages, and most of those are done using Swig. It basically automates wrapping of C and C++ code. And when I say automates, you feed it the C++ API headers, and it will produce an automatic wrapping for you, which is really good because it means as those headers evolve and new features are added to the API and features change, there's a lot less manual, tedious work. So it's not too hard to wrap an API directly using the Python C API, but each time it changes, you have to go back in and change it, and that's quite tedious grunt work and a bit error-prone. So the other real benefit for us, although that might not be so much the case for everybody, is that we can support a lot of languages using Swig, so Perl, Ruby, Java, Go, and PHP. Most of the alternatives to Swig I've seen seem to focus on a particular language. So for Python, there's Boost Python and there's C types, and I'm sure there's lots of others. I don't really know anything about those, so I'm not going to try and compare them in any useful way in this talk. So this is a kind of overview of how the process works. We have the API headers for the C or C++ library here. We feed those into Swig, which spits out a C or a C++ wrapper file and a Python file. Then we take the header file and the library and the C file, and we compile those together, and we get a shared object, which at least on Linux would be an SO. And then you take the PY and the SO, and those go into the Python interpreter, and lo and behold, you can call your C or C++ API from Python. There's one little detail I've omitted from this, which is that usually, rather than actually just feeding the header directly into Swig, you'll write what we call an interface file, which usually has a .i suffix. And that'll say pull in the header, and you can make little adjustments. So, onto the basics. I've taken most of the examples in this talk from the Zapping things because it meant I didn't have to write examples and actually test them. But I have simplified a lot of these examples so they can actually fit more into slides and to try and drop out some irrelevant details. But a couple of simple functions that tell you stuff about the version you're running. And this one returns a major version as integer, and in Python we just get to integer. Similarly, returns the version as a string. We get a string out. And these conversions, these are handled automatically for you. And if you're writing C++ code and you return a std string, or you accept a std string, it'll get converted both ways automatically. Now, you can't necessarily tell exactly how you should be calling a C function just from looking at the kind of a syntax of a prototype. So here's an example of a sort of like a maybe a registry function where we set an entry on a name and give it an unsigned integer as a value. So this gets wrapped automatically by Swig for you, takes a string, takes a value. It's converted to a C style string and an unsigned integer, and they're passed in. Here's another function that has syntactically the same prototype, but as you can probably tell from looking at the parameter names, it's probably not really going to be called in the same way. But of course, Swig doesn't know that. So here we're passing a string that has a 0 byte in the middle there, but we have to tell it how long it is, which isn't really what you want from a Python API. If someone was to write an API natively in Python, that probably wouldn't be how they'd write it, but you just pass in the string and the string knows how long it is. You can call it this way, which is a slight improvement, because at least you're not having to hard code in the length of the string. But we can tell Swig how we want to wrap this. Now, this is called an input type map. So what we're saying here is input type map. If a function takes a const char star parameter called pointer and an unsigned parameter called length, then handle them like this. So what this does is this will map a single Python parameter to two C parameters. And the first one is mapped using PyString as string, which is that's a standard function in the C API for Python. And $input is the Python parameter. And similarly, we're taking the size of the string, and we can then call it, and it will pass the C layer. So we'll receive a pointer to this string and length 11. If you want to chip in with questions in the middle of the talk, that's fine as well, or same thing, whichever you prefer. We can also rename functions in the wrappers. For example, the Zapier API class, I've omitted the details, but it has a string, has a method called getDescription, which returns a string. And this is just kind of like a simple introspection method. It tells you stuff about the class. Now, by default, that just gets mapped through to a stem object with a getDescription method. And if you call it, we create a stem with an English, EN being the language code for English. We get that when it's English. In Python, you probably want to be able to call strut on it. So what we can say is we can tell Swig, please rename the method getDescription to strut. Same API as before. And we can now call strut on it and get the same string back as before. And internally, this is just, it just changes the reference. So it just changes the name of a wrapper function we're creating to be strut in this case instead of getDescription. And the reason for the double underscore here, that's just how Python internally dispatches strut to things. Now, in fact, pretty much every class in the Zapier API has a getDescription function. So rather than having to add a lot of renames for each of them, we can write a less specific one. And this just says, rename any functional method called getDescription to strut, which is, in this case, what we want to do, because there aren't any other extraneous getDescription methods with other purposes. It still works for this example, but it would also get we'll also get any other class that has the same method, and automatically that will work in the same way. Another thing we can do is to use rename to automatically rename with a pattern. So in C libraries, it's quite common. C doesn't have any namespacing function functionality. C++ does, but C doesn't. So a common way to work around that in C is that every function in the library will have a common prefix. So your mylib library might have a mylib underscore prefix in all the functions. Now, in Python, we have a namespace, so we don't want that there. It's just you know, we have mylib.mylib underscore. It would look silly. So we can use a regular expression. We can just say, for any, the $ function will mean it only matches when it's a function. So match regular expression, if it begins with mylib underscore, replace it with nothing. And it's a bit like a %s format with brackets inside. That's what the S is doing there. We can also change the kind of a naming convention being used to match what we expected from a Python API. Pep8 suggests that you should name your functions with underscores between lowercase words, and you should name your classes with camel case, so capitalized words with no separation. There are various conventions in C and C++, but this will automatically take any method name that has camel case and change it to be underscores and lowercase. And this will go the other way for classes. Sometimes there's features in the APIs which don't really make sense to wrap for Python. One example is C++ has this kind of concept of it has this concept of a container, and a class can be a container just by implementing a certain set of methods. And then templates can operate on the containers. So it's kind of a bit like duck typing in some ways. You become a container just by implementing a set of methods. Now, one of the standard methods for a container is called max size. And although this might sound like it's useful, what it actually does is it returns the kind of implementation maximum of the number of objects you can put in the container. So for vector of int, that's probably something about a billion, assuming you've got 32-bit address space. But that's kind of the implementation maximum. It doesn't actually mean you can usefully put a billion objects in a container. And there's not really any useful use for this in Python that I can see. I struggle to see quite why it's useful in C++. I assume people use it very occasionally when they're writing templates and need to know how big the container could be in some way. But assume we don't want to talk about the max size method for Python, we can just ignore all max size methods in this way. And you might find that a C library might have some Unicode handling functionality that you don't really want to bother about wrapping because there's better Unicode support in Python. You don't really want to have non-standard Unicode support as well as the standard. Similarly, you can ignore methods or function. You can ignore classes as well. So exceptions are another thing that you usually need to do something manual about to kind of get it working how you want. The SWG has this exception feature. So this is saying that whenever you're going to emit in the C-generated wrapper code the call to the actual C function, please insert this in front of it and this behind it. So $action is the actual call itself, and these are stuff you can put around it. So you can think of this a bit like it's a form of aspect-oriented programming. So I mean, although this is called exception, for example, you could add a login call here and get it to log each call that it's making, which can be useful for debugging purposes. But its primary use is for handling exceptions or for turning things into exceptions. So here we can translate a C++ exception into Python. We do the code which makes the call into C++. If that threw a range error, which is a standard error in C++, which it means usually means something like you tried to index beyond the end of this container, then SWG exception is a kind of a macro or function thing in SWG. EWHAT is the string describing the exception we just caught. and Swig index error. Now, this is a feature Swig provides which makes it easier to write the same code in your interface file and have it work with more than one language. So I could write some Python-specific C API code here, but this particular case, I can actually write something that will work in Ruby or Perl or whatever as well. And it has a kind of enumeration which defines the kind of the common errors you might want to handle. So an index error is a sort of subscripting error, essentially, which matches pretty close to your range error. So I can just throw one of those, and in Python that'll turn into index error, I think it is. So if you were to call this, you would get an index error in Python, which you could then handle in the usual way. This is slightly more complicated. In Zapier, there's a hierarchy of Zapier-specific errors. So what we do is we wrap those error classes for Python, and when the C++ method throws one of those error classes, we want to then re-throw that error in Python as a wrapped version of it, the Python class. So again, we have the action in the try block in the catch. We create a new Zapier error object. This is just kind of, this isn't terribly clean, but it's kind of essentially boilerplate code. This is how you would probably write this. So this basically says, create a Swig error object, a wrapped up Swig error object, and throw it as an exception. And Swig fail means just sort of, we're done here, get out of here. Now, in fact, because we have a hierarchy of errors, what we actually have is a lot of these, one for each different subclass, each of which handles a different subclass and then re-throws a different subclass. Now, the problem we found with doing this is that because this gets wrapped around every method in the API practically, that generates quite a lot of code bloat in the generated file. So you end up with a generated wrapper file, it takes a long time to compile, and ends up being rather big. So we found a trick for refactoring this, which is handy to know, which is that you can write all your handling code, so all your different cases for the catching and re-throwing here, in a function. And then your exception code, which goes into each function that's generated in the wrapper file, has the action, a catch. It calls this function and then fails. So the exception here is re-thrown here and then re-caught here, which is, it's a bit of overhead in the process, but the overhead only happens in the case of an exception, which hopefully should be exceptional. Certainly for us, the compromise and reduction of size and compile time definitely makes the small overhead we incur here worthwhile. Does that make sense to everybody? Okay. We can also translate error return codes for functions in the C or C++ API into an exception in Python. So here we call a function if its result is less than zero, which is pretty common in convention in C, is that a function will return a negative result and it will set erno to a code. In the case of failure, the code that's returned reflects the error. So here I don't want Swig index error there at all, actually. But in this case, error translates the error code into a string, and I've thrown it as an index error, which is because I copied that off the previous slide, I'm afraid. But you'd use a different error class there. I'm not going to go into depth into this because it's quite a complex subject, but I'm just going to say that it's possible, basically. You can wrap a C++ class that has virtual methods, and you can tell Swig you want this to have directors, which is just a Swig word for it. And what that means is that you can then subclass that class in Python, and all the virtual method calls get rooted. So if the C code calls a virtual method on the object that's passed in, it'll get rooted to Python. It's kind of very complex behind the scenes, but basically it just does what you should expect it should do. It behaves as if it was a class written in Python that supports virtual methods and stuff. Okay, this is getting a little bit more complicated. Now, it doesn't really matter if you don't follow all the details in this. It's just kind of a concept I'm trying to get over really here. This is an input type map that says if a C++ function is expecting a reference to a vector of query objects, then the second vector here, this is saying I want a variable I can work with in my type map called v. Then this is just a way of iterating over a sequence. And I'm using a fast version here because, in fact, as well as writing an input type map, you usually write a check type map, which I'm not showing here. And the check type map will check to see that it's a sequence. The check type map is used if you have overloaded methods in C++, so we can do a sort of fake overloaded method resolution. So if you have a method that takes an integer, method takes a string in C++, so it can generate something that will see whether it's a string or an integer being passed in and decide which one to call, which in some cases that's reasonable. In some cases you probably don't want that in your Python API. And if you don't want that, you can either just ignore one of the functions with %ignore, or you can use %rename to rename one of them to a different name. But anyway, the check type map is part of that. And in this case, I have a check type map, so I can use the fast sequence because I'm absolutely certain at this point that this is a sequence because the code just in front checked that for me. We iterate over sequence. I'm just calling reserve on the vector here so that it allocates the number of items I know I need up front. Then it passes out a pointer to the vector I've just had, and the decref is just to make sure that the fast sequence goes away again. The loop body here, I'm going to put on the next slide. So this just takes each item and says, if it's a string, then push back a query object built from a C++ version of that string. If it's a query object, then there's a function, again, I'm omitting for clarity here, that gives me the pointer to the C++ object corresponding to the Python object, which I push back into the vector. So what this allows me to do is I can pass in a Python sequence which contains a mixture of query objects and strings, or just one or just the other. And this code will convert it just to a vector that just contains query objects. So we're kind of providing a dynamic typed API here to what at the C++ level is a strongly typed API. Now, the only problem with this is that there isn't a constructor in Zapier which takes a vector of query objects like that. So we can add an extra method, at least as far as Swig is concerned, which takes this, and that just passes in a pair of iterators pointing to the vector. And this uses the constructor which does exist in C++. And then Swig goes on to wrap this as if it existed, and the type map above is then used to translate the parameters for this. So it's a bit complicated, but basically it shows what you can actually achieve if you're prepared to write out some type maps to do it. We can handle multiple return values. In C, you can only really return one value. In C++, you can return std pairs of things, but people often don't. So here we have a function which takes a pointer to a string, returns VAT, just means a reference to an integer. It could be a pointer. So it returns width and height by reference. We can just wrap that in. I'm not going to show the details because I don't really have enough time. But you can wrap that easily so that in Python it decodes input and it just returns a tuple. We can wrap C++ iterators. The naive wrapping of the iterator which Swig generates by default will be something like this, where say mostly that's because you'd have to tell it to rename operator ++ to be next. But with a little bit of work, you can make it just be like a Python iterator would be. Docstrings. There's a feature called autodoc where Swig will generate a kind of just the Python prototype of a method as a documentation string for each method, because by default it often generates just a star kw args thing, which is really not very helpful as a doc string. You can turn this on and off globally. You can also say I want it on for a particular thing by putting the name of the thing you want to put it on for before a semicolon. You can override that totally in cases where it's not helpful. For example, if you have a multi-argument return, the docstring's not, autodocstring is not usually helpful. You can also say, in addition to the autodoc you generated, please add this docstring. For Zapin, what we do is we generate a whole load of docstrings by taking the docstring comments, which is a kind of like a, it's kind of a bit like Java doc or something like that, or a bit like docstrings in Python. So we parse those with docstring to get XML, and then there's this Python script which someone wrote, which generates a whole load of features, and you then import those, and you can override the ones which don't come out very sensibly, just translated directly. There was a Summer of Code project a few years ago to do something similar inside Swig, to kind of parse the docstring comments from the header and put those into the parse tree and then spit them out the other end. But it's still quite experimental and hasn't been merged yet. I'm starting to wonder if it ever will be. So to summarize, because I'm running out of time, most API features will get wrapped in a usable way automatically, although it's not always the way that you'd have written them had you written the library in Python. But with more effort, you can achieve a much more naturally written API. And this was really just a fairly brief stroll through the what you can do with Swig. There's a lot more that's possible, but I think I probably crowbarred slightly too much into this talk as it was. So thank you. If you've got any questions, ask away.
Would you say that Swig has improved much over about the last 5 years? Like, has it evolved?
It's certainly evolved. I think yes, I'd say it has. It's got much better test coverage than it used to do. William Fulton's the most active guy in Swig for a while now, and he's quite hot on having test cases for everything and for nagging people into actually doing that. So quite often you used to find that things simply didn't work, and now when that happens, test cases get added, so they, you know, from then on they will work.
I had a question. I was just kind of curious, the various rules that you might apply to the underlying C++ library. Do you have a tool when you get a new release of that library to sort of highlight where you might be getting new hits on those rules in case someone's come along and inadvertently produced a method name that matches something that previously was used consistently but has now been used inconsistently?
I don't think there's anything automatic.
Wait till it crashes on the other end.
What we try to do for Zapin is we'll look through the list of new C++ features that have been added.
Okay.
And we'll try and ensure that there's a simple test, feature test of those for at least one of the languages in Swig.
Okay.
We'll try and add it for as many as possible, but we figure if it's tested for at least one of them,
yes,
then that kind of means, you know, that it's not completely broken.
Completely slipped through.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. Right. Any other questions? No? Okay, great. It's afternoon tea time now, so if you'd like to go and get a drink or a walk, whatever. And we start again at 3:30, and we're going to do lightning talks. If anyone didn't hear the list of names previously, yes, in there, yes. Sorry, in the other room is where lightning talks will be at 3:30. And if anyone wants to hear the names again, I've got the list.